This show was previously broadcast live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Martin here from the Wake Up Call. We have an hour, and I would like to start with a piece of housekeeping which involves you, please, ladies and gentlemen, calling your senators as soon as you can and telling them not to confirm Ben Bernanke as the Fed chairman. As you know, this is coming up now to the final run into a vote. Unfortunately, it seems, according to the reports, that he will be confirmed, but it's going to be close, apparently, and if you were to put in your 2 cents, it might make all the difference. So please call your senators, tell them not to confirm Bernanke. The reason he cannot be reconfirmed is that he has continued to refuse responsibility for anything related to the mess in the first place. And yet, Ben Bernanke has a lion's share of individual responsibility for what has happened. He has refused to regulate the banks. He has refused to protect consumers against predatory acts. He has intentionally grown credit aggregates at a rate dramatically faster than GDP over the space of his entire term, and in fact influenced and encouraged Greenspan to do the same, which, of course, is the root cause of the last two bubbles and the market crashes. He has dogmatically stuck to his doctoral thesis, even after it has been proved wrong by the passage of time and the market. He has intentionally concealed the terms of bailouts and handouts that were funneled through the banks on his watch, including but not limited to AIG's bailout that was funneled to Goldman Sachs, among others. He has not supported the market. He, in fact, became the market for Fannie and Freddie Mac securities, putting himself into a box from which he has failed to explain how he will exit, largely because he realizes now that he can't. He has been dead wrong in virtually every public pronouncement related to the economy over the last 5 years, including his repeated claims that there was no housing bubble, that subprime would be contained, and that the economy would avoid a recession, and that his monetary policies were supportive of sustainable growth in the economy. Not one of those claims from 2003 to 2007 was in fact true. So for all these reasons and more, Bernanke must not be reconfirmed. Please do your bit, ladies and gentlemen. All right, this is Richard Martin, and this is the Wake Up Call. And, of course, as always, I would ask you to call in and make your voices heard on the program today. And you can do so by calling our toll-free number at 888-873-4643. Once again, our toll-free number, 888-873-4643. We had a really fun discussion last night pertaining to the reasons why America is behaving the way it is, what it's doing to itself, the way it appears to be self-sabotaging and in fact self-destructing. I have decided to prolong that discussion over maybe another week, maybe two or even three more weeks. It is, as I said before, probably the most important discussion that I will have this year on the discussion group broadcasts that we have on the Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So I would urge you maybe to listen to the archive of that show, and then please come in next week next Sunday at 9 p.m. with your own ideas. We have plenty of time for this. We will air the opinions of people, and I'm hoping that it will be something of interest to you, but more so that it is not something which is being discussed. The markets are not referring to this in any way, and the pundits are not talking about it, and it has not become mainstream conversation. Indeed, it's not become conversation anywhere that I can find. So I would be really thrilled if you would come in and give us a hand and come in with some ideas and let us know what you feel about whether America is headed on a purposeful program of self-destruction and self-sabotage as it wends its way down to the bottom of this horrendous depression. So anyway, as I was telling you, my toll-free number here is 888-873-4643. You can email me also with information and questions for the show, and the email address is rm@gfawd.com. Once more, the email address is rm for Richard Martin at gfawd for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design.com. Finally, once more, rm@gfawd.com. And my email is open, so as soon as they come in, I will try to address them. Finally, if you do want to call me in private, you're more than welcome to do so. My direct line is a Sarasota, Florida phone number, which automatically comes through to Singapore, and it is 941-441-1682. Again, the number is 941-441-1682. So, just to give you a little bit of the flavor of what is actually happening right now, you remember the massive wave of subprime mortgages that defaulted in 2007 and 2008 and caused the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression. Well, the second wave of these mortgage defaults is on the way, and there is simply no way that we are going to be able to avoid it. No way at all. A huge mountain of mortgages is going to reset starting this year, and once those mortgage payments go up, there are once again going to be millions of people who simply cannot pay their mortgages. They will walk away. Well, the Federal Housing Administration has announced plans to increase the amount of upfront cash paid by new borrowers and to require higher down payments from those with the poorest credit. The Federal Housing Administration currently backs about 30% of all new home loans and about 20% of all new home refinancing loans. Tighter standards are going to mean that fewer people will qualify for loans. Fewer qualifiers means that there will be fewer buyers for homes. Fewer buyers means that home prices are going to drop even more. So, ladies and gentlemen, please be aware, this is not the time to buy homes. I'm getting still a couple of queries on this matter. The answers are very definite, no, stay away. And as for the job market, I'm sure you all realize it's getting very hard now to find a job in the United States. A total of 6,130,000 U.S. workers had been unemployed for 27 weeks or more in December 2009. That was the most ever since the U.S. government started keeping track of this statistic in 1948. In fact, it is more than double the 2,612,000 U.S. workers who were unemployed for a similar length of time in December 2008. The reality is that once Americans lose their jobs, they are increasingly finding it difficult to find new ones. In December, there were also 929,000 so-called discouraged workers who were counted as part of the labor force because they have given up looking for work. That is the most since the U.S. government first started keeping track of discouraged workers in 1949. Many Americans have simply given up and are now chronically unemployed. Some areas of the U.S. are already virtually in a state of depression. The mayor of Detroit estimates that the real unemployment rate in his city is now somewhere around 50%. For decades, leaders in Washington have pushed America towards a global economy and told them it would be good for them. But there is a flip side. Now, workers in the U.S. must compete with workers all over the world, and the greedy corporations in the U.S. are free to pursue the cheapest labor available anywhere on the globe. Millions of jobs have already been shipped out of the United States, and Princeton University economist Alan S. Blinder estimates that 22 to 29% of all current U.S. jobs will be offshoreable within 2 decades. The days when blue-collar workers could live the American dream are gone, and they are not going to come back. During the 2001 recession, the U.S. economy lost 2% of its jobs, and it took 4 years to get them back. This time round, the U.S. economy has lost more than 5% of its jobs, and there is no sign that the bleeding of jobs is going to stop anytime soon. All of this unemployment is putting severe stress on state unemployment funds. At this point, 25 state unemployment insurance funds have gone broke, and the Department of Labor estimates that 15 or more state unemployment funds will likely go broke within 2 years and will need massive loans from the federal government just to keep going. 37 million Americans now receive food stamps, and the program is expanding at a pace of about 20,000 people a day. The United States of America is very quickly becoming a socialist welfare state. The number of Americans who are going broke is staggering. 1.41 million Americans filed for personal bankruptcy in 2009, a 32% increase over 2008. For decades, the fact that the U.S. dollar was the reserve currency of the world gave the U.S. financial system an unusual degree of stability. But all that is changing. Foreign countries are increasingly turning away from the dollar due to other currencies. For example, Russia's central bank announced on Wednesday that it had started buying Canadian dollars in a bid to diversify its foreign exchange reserves. The recent economic downturn has left some localities totally bankrupt. For instance, Jefferson County, Alabama, is on the brink of what would be the largest government bankruptcy in the history of the United States, surpassing the 1994 filing by Southern California's Orange County. The U.S. is facing a pension crisis of unprecedented magnitude. Virtually all pension funds in the United States, both private and public, are massively underfunded. With millions of baby boomers getting ready to retire, there is simply no way on earth that all of these obligations can be met. Robert Novi Marks of the University of Chicago and Joshua D. Rao of Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management recently calculated the collective unfunded pension liability for all 50 U.S. states for Forbes magazine. And what was the total? $3.2 trillion. Social Security and Medicare expenses are wildly out of control. Once again, with millions of baby boomers now at retirement age, there is simply going to be no way to pay all of these retirees what they are owed. So will the U.S. government come to the rescue? The U.S. has allowed the total federal debt to balloon by 50% since 2006 to $12.3 trillion. You get to see the reckless expansion of U.S. government debt over the past several decades. To get an idea of where we are now, just add $3 trillion to the figures that are being published by the federal government right now. So has the U.S. government learned anything from these mistakes? No. In fact, Senate Democrats last week proposed allowing the federal government to borrow an additional $2 trillion to pay its bills, a record increase that would allow the U.S. national debt to reach approximately $14.3 trillion. It's going to become even harder for the U.S. government to pay the bills now that tax receipts are falling through the floor. U.S. corporate income tax receipts were down 55% in the year that ended September 30th, 2009. So where will the U.S. government get the money? From the Federal Reserve, of course. The Federal Reserve bought approximately 80% of all U.S. Treasury securities issued in 2009. In other words, the U.S. government is now being financed by a massive Ponzi scheme. The reckless expansion of the money supply by the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve is going to end up destroying the U.S. dollar and the value of the remaining collective net worth of all Americans. The more dollars there are, the less each individual dollar is worth. In essence, inflation is like a hidden tax on each dollar that you own. When they flood the economy with money, the value of the money you have in your bank accounts goes down. So what do you think this is going to do to the value of the U.S. dollar? And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, again, I don't mean inflation in the accepted sense of the word. I mean a simple decrease in the value of each level of dollar activity that you engage in on a daily basis. There will be deflation in the system. There is already deflation in the system. Do not confuse this with either inflation or the value of the dollar as set against foreign currencies. And finally, when a nation practices evil, there is no way that it is going to be blessed in the long run. The truth is that the United States has become a nation that is dripping with corruption and wickedness from the top to the bottom. And unless this fundamentally changes, not even the most perfect economic policies in the world are going to do America any good. In the end, you always reap what you sow. The day of reckoning for the U.S. economy is here, and it is not going to be pleasant. Well, please feel free to call in. As I say, the number is always the same. It's 888-873-4643. I am always interested in hearing what you have to say. And I just got an anonymous email in. It says, Chuck Schumer's, well, this is about calling senators about Bernanke. Chuck Schumer's Washington phone number is not working and has not been working for 2 weeks. Hard to believe. An interim at his New York City office told me you can reach her at 212-486-4430. I repeat that, ladies and gentlemen, 212-486-4430. The listed phone numbers for Senator Gillibrand shoved you off to voicemail, and the one in Washington said the voicemail box was full. So I called 411, and I got a number in Albany, 518-431-0126, 0127 and 0128. That's 0126, 7 and 8. Again, the number, 518-431-0126 or 0127 or 0128. When you call, make sure the intern knows that you find it hard to believe that you can't easily reach your senators. You might also suggest that Geithner and Sumner should also be replaced. Yeah, well, that would be really some icing on top of the cake there, wouldn't it? But I'm afraid that that's not likely to happen. What's much more likely to happen is that Geithner resigns. I don't think Bernanke is going to resign. So please, ladies and gentlemen, follow the example of Anonymous and take care of this as soon as you can. Right. Well, we have two callers, and I believe I'm just waiting to find out who we have. Let's please talk to Michael from New York, who wants to talk about last night's show. Hello, Michael. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, Richard. I really enjoyed the show last night. It was a great show, and I'm glad to hear that you're going to do it again next week.
Yep, that's right. Thank you very much.
And you know, one of the things I heard you say, and in fact I was very happy to hear you say it, that I think you came to a realization that you're a little ahead of the curve on this issue. It almost sounded like you had an epiphany, and it was really good to hear, because I've been listening to you for 3 years now, and I find when I follow your advice, I'm so far ahead of where everyone else is that sometimes I'm rushing to do something, and I have more time than I think I have. So I really, I liked hearing that. It gave me some comfort. The question I have for you, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, no, question, yeah.
The question I have for you is, what is, whenever I listen to radio shows, I hear this fixation with gold and gold reserve standards. And it seems that everyone is so focused on gold and what gold does and what gold can do for the economy. I don't understand it. I don't understand why we can't have a stable financial system without a gold reserve. It seems to me that fractional reserve banking is a far greater danger to the economy than lack of a gold standard. To me, it makes more sense to have full reserve banking where banks do not have the ability to loan out massive amounts of money and get into the situation that we've been in where banks today are they have no liquidity. They're bankrupt. So I wanted to know what you thought about that. I mean, do you think a gold standard is necessary to rein in financial problems, or can we actually run an economy and run a financial system without a gold reserve?
No, you have to have some kind of an anchor for money. I mean, when you take a dollar bill out of your pocket and look at it, you're really not looking at anything. You're just looking at a piece of paper. Now, when that dollar bill is backed by gold in terms of the amount of money that it will buy on a firm basis, because it's backed by the amount of gold reserves that exist in the vaults, then you know that that piece of paper immediately is transformed from being a piece of dross to something which is really valuable. And that's unfortunately what our society needs. It needs the discipline of a gold standard, or indeed the standard based on anything else. Gold just happens to be ideal because there's a limited supply of it, and it doesn't perish like regular commodities might do, and a whole host of other reasons why gold is an ideal vehicle for making it into the standard by which currency can be judged. And of course, as I've mentioned many times before, I'm sure you remember this, Michael, I mean, the reason that gold was abandoned was because Nixon wanted to fight a war in Vietnam, and he didn't have enough money. And gold stopped him doing that. It held him back. So he just said, to hell with gold. We won't make the dollar exchangeable with gold anymore. We'll just tell them, hey, you get what you can for it on the open market. And like that, he cancelled the gold standard, and of course the Federal Reserve took that as a green light to print money like it was going out of fashion, and that was the beginning of the 70s, and of course then you had all the inflation of the 70s, because indeed the Federal Reserve was printing money like it was going out of fashion, because it could. And then, the one thing led to another, and now you have the situation that we find ourselves in today. If the gold standard had been maintained, you wouldn't have had printing of money. The expression quantitative easing could never even have been invented, because there would have been no money printing, because the value of everything would have been kept in check by the fact that the dollar was still a reference point to a certain amount of gold. And that's why it shouldn't perhaps be necessary. But, I mean, money isn't wealth. Don't forget that, Michael, money isn't wealth. Money is a measure of what wealth is all about, but it's not wealth itself. And people seem to forget that. When you have money, you really don't have wealth. You have a barometer or some kind of a measure, and that situation will obtain until such time as they put the money back on some kind of a firm standard like the gold standard. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you for the call. Tom from Queens is on the line, who would like to talk about unemployment. Hello, Tom. Hello, Tom. Is Tom still there, or has Tom disappeared into the ethers? Well, I'm not receiving either a message from Tom or an indication from Frank, so I'm assuming he has gone the way of all flesh. Oh,
hello.
Tom is on. Hello, Tom. Hello,
hey,
Tom.
Hi, Richard. I hope you're hearing
me. Go ahead. Yes, I
okay,
can.
I have an experience here local in Queens as far as unemployment, how bad it is right now in New York City. I was in a small construction company here locally in Queens, doing some computer work, And at the same time, owner was having interviewing some people for the secretarial position, just for one spot open in a office. And to my surprise, 20 people showed up for the interview with the very nice resumes, with years of experience in other companies, just for one basic secretarial position in a small, however successful, in local construction company. You know, so that's how bad it is, I think. You know, people are going from Manhattan to get a small job somewhere in Queens.
Yeah, well, that's what you're seeing all over now. You're seeing grotesquely overqualified people to do a job which absolutely doesn't need it. And interestingly enough, and I have a report that I was going to mention a little later on. I think I might as well mention it right now in answer to your very prescient call here, Tom. It's all to do with the U.S. Census Bureau, which is certainly finding itself as the most highly skilled, highly educated workforce in its 220-year history. And as you know, they're taking a census this year, and they need to employ people. The struggling economy has produced millions of these jobless people eager for work. And the bureaus have already recruited engineers, former corporate vice presidents, college professors, and radio DJs to help manage the 2010 census. Robert Groves, director of the Census Bureau's comment, and I quote what he had to say. He said, "The horrible recession has benefited us in an indirect way. Our applicant pool contains a set of people with experience and background and training that is unprecedentedly rich. If you visit our local census offices that are being staffed right now, you'll see people with skills and teamwork experience that we will benefit from, the country will benefit from in the decennial census. So the high unemployment rate has helped us." And he gives an example of Eleanor Hicks, who's helping the Census Bureau count immigrant communities. Hicks is 66, from North Avondale. She has a PhD in political science from Columbia University. She speaks French, Arabic, Thai, Spanish, Italian, and German. In her career at the U.S. State Department, she was tapped at age 29 to run the American consulate in Nice, France, gaining diplomatic celebrity as she dined with Princess Grace of Monaco and had a side career as a recording artist. She's a former University of Cincinnati political science professor, and the scholarship that goes to the top female graduate student in arts and science bears her name. She ran the Cincinnati office of the Federal Reserve Bank, chaired the region's transit authority, and now owns an international multicultural consulting business whose clients have included Procter & Gamble, Delphi Automotive, and now she's working as a partnership associate for the U.S. Census Bureau. A temporary part-time job in which she gets paid by the hour to work with minority groups, immigrant communities, and neighborhood leaders to educate them on the importance of the 2010 census. Is she overqualified? "I don't think of it in those terms," she said. "If I was looking for a career, that's a separate thing, but it's a temporary job. It serves a civic duty." The economy was just one factor. It was primarily the flexibility, this poor woman trying to justify her this job. Well, what does the pay come to? $12.25 an hour in southeastern Indiana to $16 in the city of Cincinnati. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. I mean, that's the grim prospect that you have to cope with, Tom. And
I
appreciate much the call, and we're dealing with, I'm afraid. Tom, thank you for the call.
All
we
right.
do have to go to a break right now. We'll be back in a couple of moments. If you have anything else to add, please stay on the line, and we'll take you after the break. Okay, back in a few.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Howard Robbins inviting you to listen to the Dr. Howard Robbins Show every Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We take your questions on alternative health, and we look forward to hearing from you on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Steve Barnett. I'm your host for the Paradise Parking Lot, an environmental program on the Progressive Radio Network. We're on the air from 1 to 2 Eastern Time every Wednesday. And we talk about everything environmental. This is an hour show, so there are no sound bites. This is a deep discussion of controversial environmental issues. We provide information. We provide guides to action. We have wonderful guests. For example, we've had John Holdren, President Obama's science advisor. We've had Jaron Lanier, the creator of virtual reality. This program is designed for anyone who's interested in the environment and deepening their understanding of how our planet is changing and what we can do about it.
The Progressive Radio Network is the home for progressive minds. It's the place where progressives get together to discuss important topics with informed opinions, minus the agenda. PRN is the place for fresh, stimulating, commercial-free radio content from leading progressives all over the world every day. The Progressive Radio Network, making the world a more informed place, one mind at a time.
Hi, this is Mike Fader. I'm doing a new show here on PRN, every Thursday following Gary Null from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. It's called The Turning Point. What will we talk about? Well, everything, from birth to death and most things in between. I'll be using stories in the news and personal observations from my own life. And from time to time, I'll be taking your calls. So please join me, Mike Fader, every Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point on PRN.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Well, Tom hung up, so we shall move on. You may know that a record number of Americans are turning to food stamps as America is gripped by the economic despair. Food stamps, ladies and gentlemen, would you ever accept government welfare? Would you look down on someone who does? Well, if you look down on a fellow American who receives food stamps, then get ready to look down on a massive sea of people. The truth is that over 37 million Americans now receive food stamps, and the program is expanding at a pace of about 20,000 people a day. As hordes of Americans have been forced out of their jobs and their home, millions are finding that the only way they can make it is to accept food stamps. For many, it is a tremendously humbling moment to turn to the government for help. And for so many millions to be dependent on the food stamps program is yet another indication of how deep the economic despair in America has got. Most of the time, you won't even notice them being used at the checkout counters. Today's food stamps take the form of the inconspicuous plastic cards, and they can be used to purchase a wide variety of food items. A record 37.2 million people, which is approximately one out of every eight Americans, received food stamps in September, and that number is growing rapidly. In particular, children are being enrolled in the program in staggering numbers. One out of every four children in America now gets assistance from food stamps each month. In fact, it is projected that half of all U.S. kids will be on food stamps at some point in their lives. So if nobody in your family has ever had to go on food stamps, consider yourself to be very fortunate. Things are particularly bad in rural areas such as Tennessee. Nearly 1,186,000 people who live in Tennessee, or more than one in six residents, currently receive some kind of food stamp assistance, and that number is rapidly increasing. But there are places where things are even worse. In fact, there are 239 counties in the United States where at least a quarter of the population now receives food stamps. Not only that, but it has now come out that about 1 in 50 Americans lives in a household with a reported income that consists of nothing but food stamps. Can you imagine trying to live on nothing but food stamp assistance? That is the case, ladies and gentlemen, for 2% of all Americans. Can you imagine the despair they must be feeling? So is there economic hope on the horizon? Hardly.
The number of Americans filing for personal bankruptcy rose by nearly a third in 2009. In addition, the number of people preparing to buy a home in November fell sharply in the latest sign that the housing market may be headed for another downturn. So more Americans are going to go broke, and more Americans are going to lose their homes. And a whole lot more Americans are going to end up on food stamps. The food stamps are the soup kitchens of the 1930s. The people you saw in bedraggled clothes in black and white, grainy footage, are the people you see going into the brightly lit supermarkets today with their plastic cards. Can you feel the despair in the air? Okay, we have Timothy from Los Angeles who would like to talk about derivatives. Hi, Timothy, how are you?
How are you, Richard? Thank you very much for being there for us at this time.
Pleasure.
I believe you can't speak enough about the horror show of derivatives, Richard. It is so complex to us as Americans. It's so new because they didn't teach this to us in college in Economics 101. My question to you today is, as of today, with Bernanke playing his fiddle, how do derivatives play a role at this moment while we speak, sir?
Well, thank you very much for that question. I am very grateful to you for bringing this up. Timothy, how long have you been listening to the wake-up call?
I've been listening to you for a few years now.
Do you remember way back about 3 or 4 years ago, I used to talk a lot about derivatives. In fact, I gave kind of almost like lectures, university-style lectures on what derivatives were, how they came to be, how they were formulated, what they were all about, who used them. Do you remember that? Were you listening in those days?
Yes, I do, but unfortunately, we Americans tend to have a short memory and we need to be prompted every few years as to the significance of your subject.
The reason I asked that question is because I was talking about derivatives long before anybody had any idea what they were. I mean, you wouldn't have found the word derivative in your local newspaper if your life depended on it. And I used to go through the whole process of describing a mortgage, how it was created, how it was sold off to the consolidators in Washington, how they repackaged all the different mortgages up and put them out there, along with derivatives, which were basically called insurance products that were just bets on the future of housing. And I did this over time because I wanted to prepare people for the horrors of what was certainly going to come down and visit us all in the fullness of time, even though nothing really serious had actually happened as of that point, except that the boom in derivatives was taking place. Well, now, of course, the market has bust, and derivatives are directly responsible for the failure of firms like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch, which, as you know, was taken over by Bank of America. I won't go into this now, but if there is interest, I'll do another whole program on derivatives because it's really very important.
I strongly suggest that you do, sir.
Well, let me do that then. I will prepare a program and definitely put it out there in the near future.
I will be waiting for it, and I have one statement that I feel would be very significant to get out to people. Out here in Hollywood, in the entertainment industry, I would like to warn everyone right now who's pursuing a career in Hollywood entertainment business. Coming from New York, coming from the East Coast, coming to Los Angeles by the thousands to pursue a career in show business. There is a major depression in Hollywood at the present, sir. when individuals sell everything and come to Los Angeles seeking a career in the motion picture or music industry. There simply are not enough positions or projects happening to give them even an interview. So what does this mean? It means they have to find jobs at restaurants, waiting tables, or whatever, to pay exorbitant rents at a time when in Los Angeles, in Hollywood, California, it is difficult to find a basic job. My suggestion is stay where you are at the present moment. Production companies, casting directors will not take your photograph. They will not interview you. And the universities that are teaching acting and drama, and when they graduate, they come to Los Angeles seeking their fortune in entertainment. It hurts me to say this, but you stand a better chance of going to Siberia to get into a motion picture part. I hope you hear my heartfelt message, because it's heartbreaking to see young people coming to Los Angeles and they can't even get an interview. It's hard to find an apartment that is under $1,000 or $1,200 a year, and believe me, these are no palaces. It is difficult. It is hard. You should tell everybody you know, do not come to Hollywood at this moment to pursue a career at this time. It is a depression.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Timothy. I appreciate that advice. I take that, very seriously, and I'm sure, it's a message that needs to be passed on. You know as well as I do that the people who go into show business, they have a different mindset altogether from regular people looking for a job. I'm sure that the restaurants are not hiring them as much as they were before, and that's going to, play into their decision. But, if you knew the statistics of the number of would-be actors who actually do make it, that's enough to put anybody off, but it doesn't put them off. It seems to be that the sudden gut force that brings them into the business, and indeed some of them never make it until they get to middle age. And I can't cite any people right now. Demi Moore, I think, was fairly late on in life before she made it. Glenn Close, I think, was another. But these people are prepared to just go until something happens. But I think what you say is probably very, very true. And if it can save a few people from making that trip, that fateful trip to the Hollywood environment, I think it's advice well received. Timothy, thank you very much for that. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much. While we're on calls and emails, we might as well take a few more. We have John Dusmanis, who wrote in saying, "Hi, Richard. It is not possible to fix the system because of the special interest groups' total control of government. The system is doomed to collapse very hard. When the collapse happens, the special interest groups will use this as an opportunity to take total control of everything. We will have arrived at a new form of fascism, one where most of the world's governments are controlled by multinational corporations, with the new theology being globalization. We are now in the process of going out of the frying pan directly into the fire." John. Well, thank you, Jordan. Yes, I think that we are definitely moving to a more focused form of government, which is government by and for the elites. I don't think there's any other way to look at this. I don't think there's any other way to paint this picture here.
it seems that the worse the situation gets, the more these elites control the outcome. And if indeed Bernanke is elected, as I am sort of unfortunately virtually certain he will be, this is just another in a long line of pieces of evidence that go to tell me that the wrong person is at the wrong place at the wrong time. And I can't think of a more wrong person for the job of Fed chairman than Ben Bernanke, apart perhaps from Alan Greenspan. But he serves a very useful purpose, which is to protect the interests of the moneyed classes, and that's exactly what he will do. And it's you know, a shame on a society that sees its priorities in that way, but unfortunately, that's what we're looking at. So, John, that seems to be a very prescient comment of yours. John Ilo wrote in just recently saying, Richard, how would countries like Germany change their currency from euros back to their own? John's talking about, obviously, the dissatisfaction with the euro by the European countries, following on the problems of Greece and Portugal and Spain and Ireland, and differentiating the more successful countries from the less successful ones. Continuing with John's email, wouldn't this be a nightmare and an extreme hassle for authorities and people to change their currency back? Please respond on air. Thank you. Ralph, I'm sorry, that was Ralph. It was not John. I'm reading the wrong email. That was from Ralph. Please respond on air, which is what I'm doing right now, Ralph, so I hope you're happy with that. Basically, I don't think it would be that much of a problem. It wasn't a very big deal going to the euro. It was prepared for a couple of years in advance. The money was printed. It was kept on tap by the banks, and then on D-Day, it was flung out into the general population, and it coexisted side by side with the national currencies for a short time, about 6 months, I think, and then the national currencies were withdrawn, and one was left with the euro. It's actually a lot easier than you might think. Countries like France, in fact, many countries, South America will be aware of this, have changed their currencies. Brazil has changed from all kinds of different currencies. It now has the real, but it had many, many currencies before that. Countries are used to this. They're used to, you know, reformulating their currencies either because there's too much inflation and they have to sort of lop zeros off the end of currencies, or simply because, you know, it feels good to have a different currency. I mean, Ecuador took on the U.S. dollar, as did Panama. All these countries in Europe could go back to their allotted currencies with very little trouble, I think. It would cost a bit of money, but I have a stronger feeling that they may yet do this as time goes by. And, of course, this will be very bullish for the dollar, so don't feel that the dollar is necessarily doomed. There are other currencies in equal or greater distress than the United States dollar. So I hope that answers your question, Ralph. Now let's get to Jordan's question, John Ilo's question, who says, Hi, Richard. I saw a gentleman on the media discussing the stock market rally. He felt that the only explanation for said rally was the Fed buying the market with futures. Is this possible? Thank you, Richard, John Ilo. The answer is, and it's a good question you bring up here, John, because the stock market has rallied somewhat unexpectedly, and there is no fundamental reason for the rally. In fact, in my opinion, it's going straight back down where it came from and much further down below from there. And when I say much, I mean much, with a capital M, and actually a capital UCH to go with it. But anyway, the stock market, I think, has been, I'm going to say I think it's been manipulated. I don't usually use that word, and I don't like it, and I don't really like to believe these things. But the fact is that since September, the market itself has made no progress at all on the upside. All the progress in the stock market since the month of September has been made by the rally in the futures market overnight while the Far East and Europe were trading and Europe and the United States were still sleeping. And then very simply, when the market opened after that time, it basically did nothing. It just basically kept pace with the futures. Now, it doesn't cost much money in margin to buy up the futures market, so it's actually a pretty easy market to manipulate. And of course, when the stock market opens later in the day, it really has to open up at the level of the futures. Otherwise, of course, you will understand that there are very juicy arbitrage possibilities with people who have bought the futures, then selling selling the futures and buying the stocks immediately, creating an immediate automatic profit, which, of course, they can't really do because the market will neutralize that very quickly. But nevertheless, very little money, relatively speaking, is needed to do this. And given the lack of interest in the stock market, it wouldn't surprise me at all that we've seen this kind of manipulation. However, the important thing to understand about all forms of manipulation, ladies and gentlemen, I've mentioned this before at least once, if not more, on the show, is that it never works. Manipulation never, ever works. It cannot work because the market is, in a capitalist system, the sum of all the buyers and sellers. And so when you try to manipulate a market, what you're basically doing is trying to paint a false face, an artificial face on the market. And the market cannot tolerate that because the market is not set up to receive false information. And so what will happen is the market will revert to its natural level at one point in time soon after the manipulation has finished. And, of course, remember that the manipulation at some point has to finish, whether it's a Ponzi scheme, whatever kind of scheme it is, it has to end because the interest groups simply run out of money. And that can be just as true of the United States government trying to manipulate the economy through their goosing of the, you know, stimulus programs and all the other nonsense they're trying to do to keep prices high, basically, and keep people out of markets. I mean, it's absolutely nonsensical. It's boneheaded in the extreme. But that's what the United States government is in the process of trying to do, which is exactly what they were trying to do in the 1930s. And the only effect it has was to prolong the depression by about 10 years. And that's what I'm afraid that they'll succeed in doing this time, too. Thank you very much, Ben Bernanke and all the other boneheads in government who think they know better than the market. Anyway, I hope, answers your question, John, about the stock market rally. I don't think it will, it certainly won't last, and I think that those who manipulated it up will regret having done so, although they won't admit that they regret doing so, and we'll all be the worse off for it. So, you know, what can I tell you? You know, when we come back to talking about markets and basically coming back to the real estate market, you know, in as much as we were talking about the stock market, the available pool of would-be buyers in real estate has largely already been exhausted. You know, if someone hasn't accepted a near zero interest rate on a distressed property already, they're not likely to do so anytime soon. And the modification and moratorium games can only go on so long, just like as we were talking about, you know, manipulation. After the banks offer loan remodifications, delay for months on paperwork and start to see 8 or 12 months of arrears build up, they will realize that not a penny more will be squeezed out of the mortgage. And then, of course, foreclosure becomes their best option. But, you know, the real factor here is social mood. Populist anger towards the big banks is growing rapidly. And it seems that every day we are learning of one or more nefarious activities that went on between government, the Fed, and the big banks. The backroom deals, the non-disclosure agreements, acting with inside information, conflicts of interest, political favoritism, silencing dissidents, etc., and a number of other commentators pleading with people to understand that all this was illegal and fraudulent. Nobody seemed to care at all at the time. They were scared. They bought into the argument that it had to be done for the greater good. But now, with the benefit of hindsight, the average person is starting to see what really occurred during those frantic days, namely a massive transfer of wealth from taxpayers to the financial industry. And yet the promised benefits, the unemployment getting their jobs back, investors getting their money back, etc., have not happened. In fact, as I've already pointed out before, the employment market continues to deteriorate. And now, the same financial firms are making money hand over fist and paying out bonuses like nothing had happened. The taxpayers were duped, and they're very fed up right now. President Obama's approval rating has plummeted faster than any president in the last 50 years, George W. Bush included. He makes speeches about getting the money back from the banks, and nobody believes him. Well, let me tell you, the Democrats are going to learn very quickly that if they don't start clamping down on these big banks, the voters will clamp down on them next fall, with elections just 10 months away. The feasibility of introducing any more bailouts under these circumstances is nil. There'll be a violent rebellion before that happens again. And not only that, but the Obama administration will face growing pressure to reverse as many of the bailouts as possible. They won't, of course, at least not a significant amount. But the trend of social mood has sufficiently handicapped the government's interventionist abilities. It also seems that a large portion of Americans have woken up to at least some of the Fed's activities. I see it likely that the Obama administration will be held accountable for their actions as well. A vast majority of the $23.6 trillion in bailouts, swaps, and guarantees has been directed towards supporting home prices, and for the most part, they've failed. The natural course is quite obviously for home prices to continue declining towards levels commensurate with incomes and revenue generation ability. The expiration of many temporary kick-the-can-down-the-road schemes, along with a flood of option ARM and Alt-A recasts, will significantly hamper bank balance sheets and eventually force further credit write-downs, and populist anger towards the big bank favoritism will also limit the government and the Fed's ability to enact further legislation favorable to banks. So I do think that we are close to some kind of a cessation of this activity. The American people simply will not tolerate it. And quite frankly, this will have a very negative effect on the stock markets and other markets, because if you don't get the money coming in from these bailouts and from these activities of a stimulus nature, where is the money going to come from to enter into the markets? The general public are not interested. They've already expressed their lack of interest. So if the money doesn't come, then I'm afraid that what we're going to see is a slam dunk. It's a market which goes down and down and down, just like Japan's market for 20 years. And that's what I have for you today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry, but the news is not good, and it's going to get a lot worse. Well, I'll be back on Friday with another edition of the Wake Up Call. I hope you have a wonderful week until then. This is Richard Martin wishing you good luck until then. Bye-bye.